Hi everyone, this is Dr. Will Horton, and today I get to interview an expert, Miss, I can't pronounce her name correctly. Is it Gemma?
It is Gemma, well done.
Gemma Bailey. She runs a site called NLP for Kids, NLP number for kids, which is something I'm fascinated with. I'll let her talk. And again, I'd like to welcome her. So tell us a little bit about yourself in general and how you got into focusing on children.
Okay. First of all, thank you for having me. Lovely to be speaking to you today. So my background is working with children long before I came to the world of NLP. I am a qualified nursery nurse, which means that I worked with children of a preschool age ordinarily. So nursery nurses normally work with children under the age of 13. And there's a variety of different settings that we may work in. So I'd worked in private day nurseries, I'd worked in schools, I had been a nanny, and I worked for the NHS as a community nursery nurse as well. So I'd worked in lots of different areas using my skills. I'd also worked my way up to management level and realised at that point that I wasn't too sure where my skills could take me next and what other opportunities there might be left for me to explore with that qualification. It just so happened that I was in this sort of state of mind of wondering what I might do next and not really too sure what that was going to be or what it might look like when I was struck with appendicitis, signed off work for a month. And it was during my month of respite and recovery that I came across someone on the television who was using NLP. And I thought it seemed really super, super interesting. We just had the internet installed, so that gives you some idea of how long ago it was. And I started doing some internet research around this thing, NLP, and came across hypnotherapy. And then I started investing in books, and then I went on to invest in some training. So after I'd completed my NLP training, I wanted to sort of keep the skills up by starting to work with people. I did it on quite a casual basis in the beginning. So I certainly wasn't, you know, very business minded or marketing minded or anything like that. That was all a bigger learning curve that I still had to come. But I did start seeing some clients and working with them and coaching them really. And after a period of time, I had started to see enough clients that I was able to transition from my proper job as a nursery manager and start building up my business in NLP. And it was after I'd completed my NLP trainer's training, there was a lady on the training with me who said, you know, we should really think about specializing our NLP skills in some way, because all of the other people on our trainer's training are going to become our competition. And there's quite a few of them. So we're going to have to do something a bit different. So as a result of that conversation, we decided that we would focus on working with children and using NLP. And we put together an initial workshop for us to run with them, which was fairly successful, although I did notice we had lots of NLP practitioners sending their children along as if to say, go and find out what they're doing. So from there, that kind of, I suppose, planted the seed of, okay, well, obviously people want to know what we're doing. There's possibly a good reason and a market for teaching it to them at some point in the future. From there, I started to specialize my one-to-one practice into working with children more so. And eventually the lady that I had originally set that first workshop up with, she moved away and went off in a completely different direction as a result of a new relationship. So I kept NLP for Kids going and then started to develop more comprehensive programs for taking them out into schools and for training up new practitioners so that they could deliver that work in schools, but also then in their local communities as well.
Oh, okay. Well, it's my belief always that, and part of this comes from psychology probably, that, you know, we're trained, when you learn NLP or hypnosis, you're trained as a generalist. So you're a mile wide. Yes, yeah. You can work with smoking, weight loss, stress, sports, you go down this whole list. But I remember hearing a lady talk, if you really want to get good, you go an inch wide, but a mile deep.
Yeah.
And most people go the mile wide and the and it's good to have the skills, but you know, my big thing is addictions. I've been in the addiction world forever. Mm. And in high performance sports and training, sports acting, any kind of performance. That's pretty much, I mean, I can do all the others, but that's what my focus is. So I'm always getting people asking about, hey, do you work with kids? And I said, no, I got rid of my kids as soon as I got them to join the Navy and leave the house. But it's a specialty and I understand it, but I don't really work with it. And I think it's better to refer out to people that are good at what they do. So, so what are some of the things you've developed with working with kids? Because I know it's a specific subset.
Yes, it is. To add to what you've said, I do encourage all of our practitioners to have their own niche, if you like, that they work within. So my own personal niche that I tend to find lots of clients find me because of this is something called selective mutism. And that's when children or young people tend not to speak in social environments, normally as some kind of underlying anxiety. So it can happen very often when they start a new school. And, you know, in the beginning, people think that they're shy, but then they just don't seem to break the cycle. And then the intensity of the pressure starts to build up because now they haven't spoken for so long. It's kind of, you know, a worry about, well, how's everyone going to react if suddenly I do? Is there going to be a big thing about it? So that's something that I've like personally find my fine-tuned my skills towards. But in terms of what we deliver when we go out into schools, we have 9 different programs that we offer to them. And, you know, we do create bespoke packages as well. But typically with the schools, they need some guidance as to the different directions that they may be able to go in. So different program ideas could be things like exam stress is a big one, anxiety, building confidence, overcoming bullying. And then we even have things that sort of look more towards attitude or anger management, those sorts of things. So the schools are able to, choose the programs that are the best fit for the needs of their pupils. But when it comes to our community work or coaching in the community, it really then comes down to the individual practitioners, like you say, to be able to develop that niche area for themselves and start digging that mile deep on just that very small subject area. It doesn't exclude us from doing anything else, but it just gives us a point of focus. And that's the key thing for doing it.
Okay. Well, you know, like from a business standpoint, I'm always reminded one of my friends, he's an osteopath, he's a medical doctor. And now he's an anti-aging guy. But we were talking about specialties and he goes, Will, do you realize that one of the highest earning medical doctors in the United States, which probably places him at one of the top in the world, only does one thing. He works on hands. That's it. And I'm like, really? He goes, well, you know, if you were a professional baseball player or football player, or cricket or something, this could be worth millions of dollars.
Yes, of course.
So, and that's, you know, and he goes, so, because we were talking about the specialty thing. Yeah. And so, you know, you focus on what you focus on, but what's the age group? Because I'm always asked, what's the youngest you can work with and what's the oldest you can work with? Not my own preference, right? Because I don't really work with kids that much, you know, unless I don't want to say I have to.
Yeah. But,
I mean, I will if it's necessary at the moment, but I'm going to refer out as quickly as I can. But what do you find with the difference between like smaller kids up to the adolescents who probably should be farmed out to?
Well, in terms of the workshop work that we do tend to say age 7 years and over. Just because, I mean, as you know, NLP's got lots of clunky language. So part of what we do with the training for our practitioners is to try and strip that back a little bit so that they're coming at it from a much more simplified perspective. However, it's still quite a comprehensive level of subject and understanding. So we keep our workshops relatively short. And we make them fun so that the information has a much better chance of sticking once it's gone in. But the key thing is kind of keeping the group sizes reasonable. So we tend to say a maximum of 8 in a group, because that allows us to give some individual attention if it's needed. But 7 years and over is our sort of typical ballpark. In terms of one-to-one sessions, some of our practitioners will work with younger children, and I will because I have the experience of doing so anyway. Really, the focus there, it's not so much about teaching them NLP techniques so much. It tends to be more about useful conversations and helping them to develop perhaps a better attitude or more positivity and those sorts of things. So it's NLP, but it's kind of in the lightest possible sense. And then the younger they get, the more likely it is that we're going to spend a significant proportion of the time working with the parents instead, because they are the greatest influencers. Even for children at school, the majority of their influence and education still comes from what they get at home. So being able to sort of reach out to each child's wider network is really important in the work that we do. You know, if we're asking a 3, 4, 5-year-old to take responsibility for things, there's only so much success we can expect to have with that, because so much of how they're thinking, feeling and behaving comes from the influences that they have from the people around them. So if we can impress upon those people that they perhaps need to react differently or support in a slightly different way, then we're going to make things much easier for that child, regardless of whether we ever do any sessions with them.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you bring up a good point, because I was just talking with someone else, and we forget that the word hypnosis is only 150 years old. The idea of a conscious and subconscious and preconscious, whatever, those are less than 100 years old. And then God knows, when you step into the world of NLP, the words are relatively new. And for those of us that were around pretty close to the beginning, these words were made up.
Yeah.
And there's still certain schools of thought, which I clash with, where they act like the word is more important than the process.
Uh-huh.
I'm always teaching, I don't care if you call it anchoring, I don't care if you call it triggers, I don't care. This is the concept. And it depends. When I'm working with an athlete, they don't have to know what an anchor is. They dig the word trigger. What triggers you to do this? What triggers you to do that? And so, yeah, I'd like you, that's good. And I see too many people get hung up on the words. I know, especially, I don't work with kids, but they don't need to know what the words are. I know when I'm working with addictions, I just need to help them get clean and sober.
Yeah.
I have to understand this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, one of the favorite ones for anchoring that we use with younger children is calling it a magic button, because they get the idea that, you know, it's a button, you press the button and you get good feelings. If you try and then start, you know, using terminology like anchor, it can get really confusing, because, you know, they're going to remember, an anchor has something to do with a boat. And then it can take you off down a whole different subject line. So, yeah.
Butterfly. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And yeah, we have this commercial here. I used to have one. I don't know what I did with it. It's for an office supply store. And it has the easy button.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we use that.
That is like brilliant. And I said, why don't we use that? It's like, they don't have to, look, here's the easy way. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you a story, Will. All of the workshops that I've ever done with children, I always take an easy button with me. In fact, I take it very often to the grown-up trainings as well. And then at the end of each session, I would press the easy button. And of course, it says that was easy. So this became a real thing in the NLP for kids training in the early days, because I would just leave it on the table. And whereas with children, they'll just come over and poke it to see what happens. All of the adults in the room, being that much more reserved because of all of their adult programming, would just sit there looking at it suspiciously. And by about day 3, someone would build up the confidence to say, what's the red button on the desk? And then I would say something like, oh, it's a self-destruct button. If things get really bad, then I push it. So after a while, I said, you know, it's the easy button. It turns out the kids really like it when I do the workshops with them, because it's, you know, it's just a really nice thing to enforce at the end of a day, even if it's been quite tricky, is to then round it off by saying that was easy. So then one of our practitioners, after he'd done the training, contacted me and said, I need to get an easy button. Where can I buy one? So I said, oh, I've got it in Staples. So then someone else contacted me and they said, oh, I just did a session with some kids and I think I really need to get one of those easy buttons. So I said, okay, I got it in Staples. So then the easy button became like an NLP for kids thing. Like everyone has to have an easy button. Now, we just started doing some really big projects in schools last year because we've been helping schools to access funding so that they're able to pay for our services more easily. And I always trial all of the work that we do first before I send it out to everybody else. So I went to a school myself for a whole month and delivered some of our programs on a day-to-day basis. And whilst I was there, I realized that there are certain things that I would normally take with me to a workshop that I would like the school to have provided for me, but they didn't. And it was silly things like, you know, sometimes the children forget to bring their pens or pencils with them, so I needed spares. Sometimes I just needed to write reminders for myself, so I needed post-it notes. Sometimes, you know, they'd put me in a classroom with no tissues and you've got children with snotty noses, this kind of stuff. So I made this whole long list of like, this is the sort of NLP for kids school kit, if you like. This is the box of tricks that we need to take with us to have a really successful day in school, but also to feel really comfortable. And one of the things on the list was the easy button. So when I had finished my work in the school, I started researching, right, where can I get all of these things for at the best possible price? And it turned out that in the UK, Staples has been sold and you can no longer buy easy buttons anywhere. So I'm thinking, oh my God, what are we going to do? I have all these new practitioners starting. We're going into all these new schools and no one can get hold of easy buttons. So I went onto eBay and I found someone in the States who had a stock room full of old easy buttons. And I ordered from him 100 easy buttons that I had shipped to the UK so that we can give them out to our new practitioners when they come on board.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Yeah. All right. And one other thing I'd like you to expand upon a little bit is, because it kind of ties, I can only tie it to what I think, but
yes,
like working with the family, because I know in the addiction world, we got to fix the whole system, as Virginia Satir would say. Take an addict, you pull him out, you get him clean and sober, you put him back in, and then you're shocked when he's drinking again.
Yes.
And he's back at the pub, as you guys would say, you know. So you got to work with the system, especially with kids. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that there's a few different things that can happen in regards to a sort of parent-child system. One is that sometimes parents think of children as being much more fragile than they really are. And part of helping children to develop more resilience or more grit, we might say, is making sure that they've got ample opportunity to A, get things wrong and make mistakes sometimes, and B, to think independently and to make their own decisions. So one of the things that might happen is, for example, a child who doesn't have very much confidence, or a child who's very sickly and off school very often. So what we might need to look at there is, well, is this parent supporting the child in developing their independence? Or is the parent maybe getting their own needs met by maintaining perhaps a little bit too strong of a connection with this child, being overly loving, making too many decisions for them? And it's actually, you know, through no fault of their own, it's disempowering that child. So we might see something like that happening sometimes. Another example could be, so we have sort of a comprehensive set of questions that we ask at a consultation level. And one of them sort of says, tell us about what you do. So when you have this problem or this behavior that's happening, what exactly are you doing? And then the next question after that is, what do the people around you do when you do that? And the question after that is, and then what do you do when they do the thing that they do? So we're just starting to sort of peel back the layers of the onion so that we can really find out, well, is this behavior or this challenge that they're having, is it being maintained by other people's reactions towards them or by what other people are doing in response to them? Sometimes we recognize that if a child were to get rid of their problem, they might also be getting rid of some of the good things that they get out of having this problem. So perhaps it causes them to avoid things that they don't want to do, or to get things that they do want to have, which they risk losing if they were to overcome this problem. So part of the work that we do is helping the child to realize that, and part of it's about working with the parent to make sure that the parent realizes that. And it's a real fine balance. There's no sort of hard and fast rule as to the right way forward. It's really about taking each case and each family on their own merits, because I've worked with families before where I've known that really the problem is being maintained by the parent. But if I were to be very direct and say that to the parent, there was a strong possibility that they might get offended and then react badly. And then, you know, I don't get to help the child anyhow. So in those sorts of cases, I might be a bit more covert in the way I interact with the parent and maybe make, you know, more like gentle suggestions or say, here's something I need you to do at home to help support your child in the transition that they're making with me. And actually, I'm not really transitioning the child at all. I'm transitioning the parent. So there's all sorts of different ways that we might need to manage things. And exactly the same sorts of circumstances may also apply in a classroom, because of course, you know, children are having relationships with their teachers and the other children that are there as well. So there's all sorts of different dynamics that we might need to take into consideration.
Oh yeah. Enabling is.
Yes, that's the one.
I know a quick story. I'll tell two quick stories if you don't mind. One is there was, my hobby's acting. It was a career I break away, which led me to do this, but I still act. I was taking a class, and it was by a lady who's a professional casting director. So that's her thing, and great class. But she goes, at least once a month, someone will call her up and go, you know, pay for her coaching, because she coaches, pay the whatever her hourly rate is. And they bring a kid in, and they go, my daughter or my son wants to be an actor. Okay, fine. She goes, she's ready to coach him up on how to do it. But what I want you to do is tell him to grow up, get that shit out of his head, so he can go and get a real life. And she goes, oh, okay, well, okay, right. And they do the paperwork. Then she turns to the kid and she goes, do you really want to be an actor? Yes. Do you realize how hard it is? Yes. Well, my advice to you is go after it with all your heart, body, and soul. Don't let anybody talk you out of it, because if this is your dream, you'll never be happy unless you chase it. And of course, you can imagine the parent's reaction to the side. But she's not trained in what we do. Now she's taken some training because I met her. But she'll look at them and they go, they start losing. She goes, well, would you rather your son, she tells this story, would you rather your son get his CPA and be an alcoholic in an abusive relationship and in and out of jail? But he's a CPA.
Yeah.
Or would you rather your son be a not successful actor who's loving and joyful and kind?
Yeah.
So if you, and she flips it, it's brilliant. So if you really love your son, you've got a choice to make.
Yes.
And and you know, it's like the time I remember somebody was asking me about their kid. It was again a son, and he's like 20, and they kept talking about, well, when they first were talking to me, it's about my boy. And then when I met him, he's 20,
right?
I'm like, I turn to the parent and I go, I'm going to introduce you to two people, and to the son too. And she goes, well, who's that? And I go, well, they're both, one's in the Army, one's in the Marine Corps. They just got back from their second combat tour. So please don't tell me this is a little boy sitting in. You know, I was jumping out of airplanes at 18. So it's like, you know, and again, it's about working with the families. So I'm glad that you teach that. And is that something you spend, because it's touchy. I'm not the most delicate guy in the world, as you could tell.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Our initial sort of level of training is the NLP for Kids, which is all about working directly with children, coaching them, delivering workshops, and working with schools to some extent as well. And then we have an extra level after that, which is NLP for Parents and Teachers. And the reason why that level of training actually came about, because I would have quite happily avoided both of those areas, if I'm completely honest. But the reason why that training was created was off of the back of an experience I had where I was coaching a young man, and his mum had called me up to say he's very angry. He was about 13 years old. And she said he has terrible anger problems. I want him to come and see you, and I want you to hypnotize him to make his anger go away. And I said, okay, well, what I would like to do is to meet with him first, talk to him about what's going on. And the very first session we do together, I'd like to just find out what he wants out of life and help him to develop some different strategies for maybe controlling his thinking. Probably a great deal of his anger is coming from something that he's thinking about, or a series of things that he's thinking about. So I think it would be a useful way to spend our time in our very first session is to give him some more of the sort of behavioral and cognitive techniques, which will also give us a chance to build up some rapport with each other, so that then if we do hypnosis later, then he's going to be feeling much more comfortable with me because we've already spent some time together. So she said, okay, but I really want you to do the hypnosis. And I said, okay, we'll see about the hypnosis after I've met him, and we'll make a decision about the right way forward from there. So anyway, he came to see me, and in the first session that we did together, we did a technique that I developed, which is partly made up of timeline therapy. It's partly made up of sort of reframing. So there's several sort of different things that all cross over from NLP terminology. And basically what we do is we draw a line, and we say, okay, on this line, this represents your past up until the point of now. And then we draw a little stick person and we say, right, you're at a crossroads. You've got two different routes that you can take in life. One is where you carry on exactly as you are, and the other path is going to take you in a different direction. We don't necessarily know what that's going to be just yet, but we just know it will be different. And it's going to happen because you're going to change in some way. So let's talk about the two different routes and how those might pan out for you from the perspective of what your life could actually look like on each of those paths. And then we go through different key events that, you know, young people experience, like taking their exams or passing their driving test. And I say, if you were to carry on as you are now, what would that look like? What would your exam results end up looking like if you carry on as you are now? What will your driving test turn out like if you carry on the route that you're on now? What kind of a job will you have? What sort of a relationship? And we go all the way through right to the end of their days. And then I say, what will the end of your days look like? Who will be there with you? What will you think when you look back on that life? And then we do the same thing for the change path. And the change path, it's not sort of enforced that it will be more positive, but typically they know that already because you talk about them making a change and doing something different. And we go through all the same series of different life events and then how they will be thinking about it by the time they reach the end of their days. So I did this process with this young man, and at the end of it, we kind of got to the end of the session, and he goes, that's been really useful for me. And I'm going to take this home and I'm going to write it up in neat. Is that okay? And I went, yeah, that's definitely okay. And he said, I'm going to put it up on my wall by the side of my bed so that every morning when I wake up, it's the first thing that I see and the first thing that I think about before I, you know, go off into the day. And I went, that's really good. You know, I'm really happy with that. And then he said, if I think of anything else that I can add into it, is it okay to do that? And then I can talk to you about it next time. And I went, yeah, that is definitely okay. So I was really pleased, like complete turnaround in his attitude. Now, that's not to say that the problem was completely solved, but he was definitely on board with moving forward in the right direction. So we got Mum in at the end of the session, and I said, I'm going to let him tell you what we've done today because he's really excited about it, and, you know, I want him to share it with you. So he did, And then she looked at him and then she looked at me and she said, that's not going to work. That's not going to do anything for him. No, he needed to have hypnosis. That's the only thing that's going to work for him now. He's done stuff like this before and he never sticks to it. He never has and he never will. And I watched him out the corner of my eye deflating, like visibly sinking into the chair. And I said to her, well, you know, maybe this is a conversation we need to have away from him, because I feel really reluctant to take away his enthusiasm right now. I know that he's been really positive in today's session, and I would like to not ruin that for him by, you know, talking about your concerns in front of him. That's something for us to do privately. So anyway, they left the session, and my assistant was coming back into the room as they were leaving, but they didn't know who she was. So they didn't know that she was coming back in to see me. And when she got into the room, she said, oh my God, was that family one of yours? And I said, yeah, why? And she said, that boy was just going really crazy at his mum, saying, I can't believe you embarrassed me like that. I can't believe you spoke to that lady in that way. I'm so ashamed of you. So I thought, okay, I didn't actually resolve his anger issues, but at least he's learned to enforce some boundaries. So that's maybe not a bad thing. But at that point, I thought, I have to start dealing with the parents as well. I can't avoid them any longer.
Oh, yeah. Well, like they say, they got, you know, in the addiction world, they say they got, you get sick somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, you know, like a lot of people on my list that I talk to, obviously, are NLPers and hypnotists.
Yes.
Varying levels. You know, I teach the basic master trainer NLP, and uh-huh. and I'm been in the National Guild of Hypnotists forever as one of their trainers. So how do people contact you, and what do they have to do to start taking classes and stuff?
So the main website to visit is nlpforkids.org. So numerical 4 and then ORG on the end. That website is huge. So it's a kind of ever-growing resource of information. So for people who are just interested, we have blog posts that go out on at least a monthly basis. We also run a competition every year where our practitioners write an article which goes out to all of our social media networks. So there's content on there by lots of other people, not just myself, but other people who are working with children using NLP. We've got some ebooks on there for people to download on the products page. And then for anyone who's, you know, perhaps thinking more along the lines of, is there someone that can work with me or my child? There's a page for the practitioners as well, which is called one-to-one sessions. Beyond that, if people were sort of looking at things from a more serious perspective, then we do have a home study program, although it's not accredited. So it's more just about sort of self-development, but it is the exact same kit that we provide to our qualified NLP for Kids practitioners. So it's a huge chunky manual like this size. We have a 7-DVD set of the live training taking place. So you get to see what actually happens on the training. We have a 17-DVD set in there of the workshops taking place with children, so you can see how it looks when we actually put it into action with young people. And then there's also a DVD of a one-to-one session with a young man as well, so that you can see how it works on more of a therapeutic level as opposed to the workshops, which are more sort of skills development kind of level. So it's a really comprehensive piece of kit. And then for anyone who wanted to go, you know, the sort of next stage beyond that, and look at doing some training. At the moment, we're only running the training in the UK, just for ease more than anything. Typically, people come for the first 4 days, and then you have the option to upgrade for another 4 days onto the parents and teachers, and another 4 days beyond that, which is our hypnotherapy for kids training. And if anyone isn't qualified at the NLP practitioner standard yet, then we include that as an extra bonus gift. If they are qualified at that level already, then they can always do a refresher with us. And it's really just to make sure that their NLP skills are up to scratch and nice and clear in their minds. It's not children specific. We do have other people who come onto that training as well. So yeah, that's really about kind of getting the nuts and bolts of the NLP in place. Whereas NLP for kids is, okay, now we know something about NLP. How are we going to tweak it and make it work for young people?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've referred quite a few people to your site to get info on, because I'm like, I don't do that. cool. All right. Well, any closing remarks?
Well, main thing to say really is we do send out an awful lot of content. So there's loads of free stuff available for people. There's lots on the website. I've just started up a new video series on YouTube as well. There is a video which is for parents and professionals. And there is then also a video which is specifically for young people. So they've got two different kinds of themes going on. And those will probably be going out on a monthly basis now. But that's just another place to sort of really be able to tap into some free content. Plus, we had a webinar series last year, so that's still available online as well. Those are four webinars, one about confidence, one for anxiety, one about communicating with children effectively, and another one just around sort of mental health and well-being. Those four webinars formed the basis of a book that got published at the tail end of last year, which is called Stop Anxiety and Grow Confidence. And that's available on Amazon for anyone that might be interested in reading that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you for joining us here. And I hope you have a great rest of your holiday. Take some time off.
Thank you very much.
I hope you have a great day.